Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's The Takeaway. I'm Duarte Giraldino. We stay on politics now with a former politician who knows our current electoral landscape very well.
I'm Anise Parker. I'm the president and CEO of the LGBTQ Victory Fund and Victory Institute.
As the head of the Victory Fund and Institute, Anise Parker supports LGBTQ politicians in elections across the country. But before that, she was the mayor of Houston, Texas from 2010 to 2016. She was also the first openly LGBTQ person to hold that office.
Tonight, the voters of Houston have opened the door to history. I embrace that. I know what this win means to many of us who never thought we could achieve high office.
That was Mayor Parker right after she was elected. And while she never hid her sexuality, she also chose not to make LGBTQ rights a central part of her platform when she was running for mayor.
By the time I ran for mayor of Houston, I'd already been elected six times citywide in Houston. And the city knew I was a lesbian. They knew my wife. They had seen me. And arguably, I was the most visible lesbian activist in Houston in the 80s. So it was part of my public persona. And I felt the most important thing was to talk about the issues that were most relevant to Houstonians while being true to who I was.
In many ways, Mayor Parker's approach as an LGBTQ politician is similar to Pete Buttigieg's approach. By the way, Mayor Parker supported Buttigieg in the 2020 primary before he dropped out of the race. Just like Buttigieg, Parker walked a fine line as an openly LGBTQ candidate while running for mayor of Houston in 2009.
I got a combination of attacks from the right for being LGBT, but I was also criticized from the left. I know that I ended up in a runoff with another moderate Democrat, and he outlined a much more aggressive LGBT agenda for his first year in office.
Than you?
Than I did. Yes. And in one of our televised debates, it was a question that came up, and he talked about that. And I said, I recognize the importance of those issues and I was going to work on them, but we were in a crisis and those were not the primary issues that I thought faced the city of Houston in that first term.
So was he trying to say you weren't gay enough?
I think so. Perhaps, but yeah, I think more truly. He was trying to segment the voters and making a pitch to appeal specifically to LGBT voters. But having been in politics for a very long time and actually been on the ballot 11 times, personally, I've learned a few things. And one is that people want to know that you have an understanding of their lives, but they're not single-issue voters. They want the whole package. And when you begin to pitch certain things to certain communities, you abandon that.
You've been president of the Victory Fund since 2017. How much has the national landscape changed for LGBTQ politicians since you first became Houston's mayor?
Oh, it's changed tremendously in an amazing positive way. But some of that is because of the work of politicians, of people who are LGBT standing up, running for office, representing the community well everywhere. And, you point out that I am I'm in a representative, a big blue island in a toxic red sea that is
the
Texas.
Toxic red sea.
It is very toxic, not necessarily to the LGBT community, but in a whole lot of other ways. But our candidates, LGBTQ candidates, win wherever we run, when we are the best candidate with the best ideas. There are people who will vote against us, no doubt, because of who we are. And I don't know that there's anybody who votes for us because of who we are. But for most voters, it may be a data point. And if we give them enough other data points on the positive side, it's not a factor.
The Victory Fund endorsed Pete Buttigieg for president. And you say that, you know, LGBTQ candidates win wherever they're the best person. In retrospect, was he the best person?
I absolutely believe that he was the best candidate for president of the United States. And we endorsed him. And to give you a little bit about the Victory Fund and Victory Institute, both of which I run, Victory Fund's a PAC. We only work with LGBT candidates. We are policy agnostic. We only work with LGBT candidates. And then the Victory Institute is we do candidate trainings. We invest in elected officials, helping them move up the process, training and so forth. But on the fund side, we don't just endorse every LGBTQ candidate. In 2018, for example, there were more than 700 out candidates who ran across the United States.
700?
700. We reached out to a little over 400. We formally screened more than 300. I believe we endorsed 291 candidates. And so what we're looking for is candidates who have a path to victory and who can get across the finish line and represent their constituents. And since we don't do policy, we don't grade them on, you know, what their position is on immigration or infrastructure. We look and see whether they are competent and credible and they're running a good campaign and they're a good fit for their district. Our win rate historically has been in the mid-60s, and that's where we like it to be. Pete had a different problem. Let me back up again. We didn't endorse him when he put his exploratory committee together. We didn't endorse him when he formally entered the race. We actually watched him for 6 months, and we told him he had to prove himself on a level playing field with all of those other candidates, many of whom are among the best-known names in American politics.
So how did he prove himself?
Over and over again. He qualified for the debate stage. He soared in the polls. He took everything that was thrown at him. He appeared in, you know, he did every media interview. He never once let us down. He never once went off message. He was a phenomenal candidate. What he wasn't was known to the majority of Americans. He started from a standing start when most of the other candidates, people like Biden and Sanders, had been running for years. And most of the other candidates had been well into their campaigns when he came in. And while I think being a mayor is the best training for any political office, he was starting from a mid-sized Midwestern city. He had a funny last name. Oh, and yeah, he's gay, but man, he speaks seven languages and he's brilliant and all these other things. But he had to introduce himself. No one knew who the heck he was. So we believe he did an exemplary job as a candidate, but he didn't have enough runway to get to where he needed to go.
You think it was right for him to step out of the race before Super Tuesday?
Yes. I'm not privy to the strategic conversation that went on in his campaign, but there's nothing wrong with being a long shot candidate if you can see a path to victory. But when you can no longer see a path to victory, and there are other candidates who you can hurt by staying in the race, get out of the way. And I think that's what he did. And, I mean, Amy Klobuchar did the same thing, Elizabeth Warren. But earlier in the race, Kamala Harris. I mean, as Victory, we are no longer involved in the presidential campaign because we only work with LGBTQ candidates. We don't endorse allies. I mean, I personally am going to be all in for Joe Biden. But he would have been perhaps my fifth choice for president. But yeah, that's the way politics works.
So you're voting for the person who you believe is most electable at this point.
I believe that I'm voting for the person I believe is best fit for the job, not necessarily the most electable, but I believe he is also the most electable.
You know, at this point, we have just Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden as the two viable Democratic candidates in this race. What do you make of the fact that the most diverse presidential primary field in history has whittled down to just two straight, older, white men?
I think it has a lot to do with Donald Trump. I think the fact that we had the most diverse field in American history has partly to do with Donald Trump. There has been an explosion of candidates in 2018 and now again in 2020, of women, of candidates of color, of LGBTQ candidates, people who have never run for office before, immigrant candidates who are saying, this is not the country that I want. He doesn't represent me. This is not how I think America ought to be. If no one else is going to run, I'm going to run. And it's been beautiful to watch and to work with. And we now have enough people in that pipeline. You have to, the criticism of Pete, here's a mayor of a mid-sized American city running for president. You have to have people in the political pipeline who are at a level ready to step into the game. Well, we now have women senators and women governors, who have that executive experience, who have the profile, who are ready to run. We're getting to where we have critical mass. So that's another aspect of it. But what I think ultimately it came down to is everyone is so desperate. Two-thirds of America, three-fourths of America is so desperate to beat Donald Trump that they're trying to, instead of saying, who's the best person to lead the United States of America, they're trying to say, who can we get who can beat Trump? And I'm not going to take any chances.
If we can look at Biden and Sanders' platform, when it comes to LGBTQ rights, what do you make of it?
So today, well, actually every year, the Democratic Party gets better and better on LGBTQ issues. Both of them are good on our issues. Both of them have evolved on our issues, but the whole country has evolved on our issues. And there's no comparison to where the Trump-Pence platform is. There are any lesbians that I know of, but I know gay men who support Donald Trump. That's fine. They cannot do that and also say that he has been good for the LGBT community. And they can't do it and say that he has been less than hurtful to the trans community.
Do you think you'll see an LGBTQ president in your lifetime?
I sincerely hope so. Yes, I'll go ahead and say yes, and I say that because there are no secrets in politics. I have a Wikipedia page. I'm 63 years old. And I hope I'll be around long enough to see it. But if you had asked me when I started out as an activist in the 70s if we would have marriage, if you'd asked me if we could be elected as governors, there's two U.S. governors who are LGBT. As senators, there are two big city mayors. I think there's six right now. I would have said that wasn't possible. Could we have marriage? Not in my lifetime. So, yeah, in my lifetime, we'll have an openly LGBT president.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Anise Parker is the president and CEO of the Victory Fund and former mayor of Houston. Mayor Parker, once again, thank you.